money.
Quickly to Wall. Wall measures. Beal gets open for three. Dagger!
They don't have any time.
Here comes Pierce with 5 seconds left. Pierce with three. Pierce with two. Pierce fall away at the horn. It's gone!
Morris, Wall, Beal, and Gortat. Porter can't find anybody. Gives it to Wall. Working against Bradley for three.
Will, 1 for 16?
Yeah.
I got 1,000 more to go.
Inside.
It doesn't bother me. You know, it was a solid look. I probably should have got to more towards the middle of the floor and cleared out the corner. So, they did a good job of helping. I was looking to draw first and end up having a true tough one. But, like I always say, win or lose, it's going to be on my shoulders. So, if we went down, I'll take it, you know, and I'm only going to be in a situation for the rest of my career, so gotta get used to it.
Defense.
Start going in.
Hey guys, so that was Bradley Beal talking about he's going to get 1,000 more of these clutch shot opportunities, and this is the Locked On Wizards podcast. I am your host, Noah Getzel. We are here with, I almost forgot your real name for a second, Brendan, but the Twitter name is Threesus Christ, and so Brad Beal says he's going to, you know, get 1,000 more of these clutch opportunities throughout the rest of his career. He thinks that they're going to start dropping. I think that'll depend on the play that the coach draws up from. But this is the Wizards Extra Podcast, and we are going to talk about the Wizards' thrilling overtime finish, 117 to 113. We'll talk about the good and bad and how it seemed like the Wizards were at some points doing everything they could do to lose that game. And then we're going to talk about a potentially big injury for the Wizards. Otto Porter's been struggling with hip issues, not just throughout this season, but throughout his NBA career and even when he was a star at Georgetown. So he went down and missed the end of the fourth quarter in overtime. So we'll talk about the Wizards' options and how long they should rest him and what sort of wing depth they have. And finally, we're going to talk a little bit about Ramon Sessions' debut and the Wizards' meeting with some of the NBA officiating heads and mentors to talk about where things stand now in terms of player-referee tensions and what kind of changes could foreseeably happen in the future. So we're going to get started with the game recap. Brendan, can you please start off by introducing yourself? You've been on the podcast before. We're thrilled to have you back. Let us know who you are and how to spell your awesome Twitter name.
All right. So my name is Brendan, and you can find me on Twitter at Threesus Tristus, Threesus Trist. And I was formerly with Wizards Extra, Hoops Nation, the Beale Street Bears, and Sir Charles in Charge. And now I'm actually starting my own site, so I'm excited about that. But yeah, that's all you need to know about me.
Awesome. So what kind of sticks out about from this overtime victory for the Wizards, where it seemed like they made some good defensive stops, and there were definitely highlights from the game that we'll talk about. For example, you know, hitting 14 three-pointers, trying to do your best impression over in the Nova High Schools back in the day, Brendan. But there were clearly some faux pas as well. How many? 19 turnovers, I believe. So that's not looking too good. The Wizards snapped their three-game losing streak. And then also kind of just like the late game lack of execution. They had a chance to win it with 22 seconds to go at the end of regulation. Got off an awful attempt from Beal, which was an iso ball play, tightly guarded. And then they probably should have had a turnover, their 20th turnover, late in overtime when it seemed like there was a five-second violation, but the refs were lenient. So what do you think, like, sticks out about what allowed the Wizards to win this one, Brendan?
I think it's a simple matter of Miami just doesn't have simply enough talent as Washington, and I think that that's what got them over the top, especially you know, in those close moments in the fourth quarter and overtime when they needed to make plays and they were there. You know, there were still moments there where the Wizards were, you know, kind of jacking up and not making the correct plays, and that's just kind of the things that they always do. But I think just due to the lack of Miami's star power, they were just kind of able to get over the top. And this is something that we're just kind of accustomed to as Wizards fans. When they had the eight 15-point lead or whatever it was. I mean, I'm sure no one thought that they were just going to go ahead and keep steamrolling this team. Miami and Wizards games are always close, and if someone ever gets a big lead, the other team always fights back. That's just typically how it goes. And that was the case tonight. But again, just the better team won, the more talented team won, and I think that was a deciding factor.
Mm-hmm. What was pretty surprising to me is that the whole starting lineup for the Heat, let's see, 32 and 8, 40 points, 49 points, and then 64 off the bench. So, like, Hassan Whiteside, who I think he missed the All-Star game this year. Dragic was their one All-Star. But, like, Hassan Whiteside is supposedly one of the best centers in the league, and he was limited incredibly, 8 points and 6 rebounds, 4 of those offensive, just shot 4 of 9. If I were to tell you that, never mind, would you think this game would even go to overtime with Hassan Whiteside performing so terribly? I guess it just says a ton about the depth of the Heat team.
I think it goes back to the depth. I think the Heat are definitely a deeper team than the Wizards, not by much, but it's definitely there, especially from their guard play off the bench with guys like Tyler Johnson. Josh Richardson was a guy who I think started tonight and has been starting for a while, but he's a guy that used to come off the bench, especially in previous seasons. But again, I think it's just the depth, and it speaks to that, and they were able to keep them in the game and bring them back in the game. So definitely more given credit to Miami's depth.
Mm-hmm. And let's recap like how the narrative of this game kind of unfolded a little bit. So the Wizards started the game up, 25-7? And it was just ridiculous shooting numbers. Their defense was on point. And then at the end of the first quarter, it was like a 18-6 run. The Wizards ended up leading 31-25. But then in the second quarter, like the Heat run just kind of continued. It kind of went up to 30-12, and the Heat were able to tie the game up at 39. So this 18-point lead totally evaporated. And then to start the second half, the Heat got 4 consecutive steals. So the Wizards were really sloppy with the ball after I think they had 6, I believe, it was bad. It was basically like in the third quarter they had 6 turnovers. The whole first half they just had 7. That obviously ended up with 19, which isn't the best number. Why are the Wizards, I guess they're playing a playoff opponent, but it just seems like they can never really put their foot on the throat of the opponents and take advantage of these big leagues and leads and close teams out, stop the, and, just give their guys some rest in the fourth quarter. We had Beal playing 43 minutes once again after he did that last night, or not last night, Sunday.
Yeah, it's definitely frustrating. I think it goes back to the head of the stakes. So this game for particular, you would have to look at Bradley Beal and guys like Otto Porter. In big moments like that, and when they are able to just kind of put, the foot down on the gas and just roll over a team, and especially with like John Wall too, they just don't do it. They kind of fade back. They don't care as much, especially on the defensive end. And I think that's what we just saw tonight. And Miami's a team that you don't want hitting those momentum shots, and they absolutely are a team that hits momentum shots, and they don't like to get out in the arc. Sometimes the Wizards don't, and the Heat are definitely a team that's going to capitalize on that. So that was a huge part of it. And yeah, it's just definitely more of an effort and a mentality thing, and I still just don't see the killer instinct that needs to be had going into the postseason. And again, these guys are different players in the postseason. This is just a regular season game. And was the result of this game going to decide a whole bunch of things? No, it wasn't. But it's you're getting to a point now in the season where these wins are going to, start mattering. And I know that in past seasons, we start mentioning this every year, even at the beginning. We say these games down the line are going to matter, especially when it comes to standings. And I mean, that especially holds true now, and especially with a tough schedule, you don't really have room to let up. But I think that what we've seen over the past few games is the Wizards have been really tired, but I don't think tonight they look so tired. But obviously, like you said, they played heavy minutes. Beal played 43, Markieff played 41, Otto played 31. So that's definitely not what you want to see. You want to be able to close these guys out pretty quick.
Yeah, and when you talk about the killer instinct, can we go back and talk about two particular plays which seemed like the Wizards totally dropped the ball and then dodged a bullet? So I'm talking about the last play in regulation. When the Wizards had 22.5 seconds to go, and Satoransky held it for a little bit, he found Beal, he kind of like everyone cleared out. He just tried to make a one-on-one ISO move, and then the wing defender seemed to kind of flinch at jumping over as Beal was kind of like pulling up for his step-back jumper. That fell way short, and so that wasn't, you know, the best executed play when you have that much time on the clock to do something besides just ISO. And then in overtime, with about 10 seconds to go, the Heat got two of the shots that, like, they couldn't have asked for better looks, essentially. So Dwayne Wade, who had a big game off the bench, 15 points. He's obviously one of the best closers in, I don't know, the past two decades of basketball. And he took Tomas Satoransky right down into post. Pump fake got pretty much wide open, but Markieff Morris was able to come in and contest the shot a little bit. So Wade missed it, but Markieff coming over for that help left Kelly Olynyk wide open for that putback rebound. Lucky he missed it as well. Oubre got the rebound, and it was history from there. And finally, one other big mistake that the Wizards made. In fourth quarter and overtime, they shot 4 of 8 from the free throw line, which turned out not to be costly, but it really put them at risk. So let's start with the end of regulation. What would you have liked to see in terms of a play to win the game with the score tied? Obviously, Scott Brooks seems to favor just, okay, let's let the time expire. Let me give the ball to my best player and see what happens instead of let's execute something, you know, more of X and O's approach to try and getting a play run instead of just saying everyone clear out, Beal's going to take it.
Well, I think that we can all agree that in that situation with Otto Porter being out that Beal needed to take the shot, and that's not the problem that that's not the thing that I had an issue with. I would have liked to see more movement. So, for example, they could have just set a simple ball screen. They could have had Markieff Morris or Mike Scott set it. Mike Scott can pop or roll. Markieff Morris can do both as well. So mm-hmm. Either of those options would have worked. You could have done a floppy screen and maybe – I mean, I know Beal was – he got a screen essentially to get open, but it was kind of way too early. Maybe you do it a few seconds later and set a different kind of screen, like I said, a floppy screen to kind of get him open more on the wing. And if it's not there, then he can attack, distribute if someone's open, you know, draw help side, whatever. But pretty much those two options is what I would have preferred other than a Beal ISO. And I know that Beal – is good sometimes in isolation, and he has that nice turnaround jumper that he's kind of perfected, but you're not going to get that in that kind of situation. And I think he was sold on the fact that he was going to get there, beat his opponent, do that step back or that turnaround jumper, and obviously, again, it didn't work.
And then in overtime, do you think it was like poor defense, or it was just like a positive matchup on that final play where Wade was able to get all the way into the paint, pump fake, and then, you know, just inches away from getting that? What would it would have tied the game? Is that right? Were the Wizards down two at that point? Or up two? Yeah. Okay. Do you think there was an issue? Do you take any issue with that defensive stand?
I mean, you would have liked the thing, and Wade's a Hall of Famer first and foremost, so I'm not trying to crap on Wade by anything. I mean, he can still get to his spot whenever the hell he wants. But the thing about it is you would like to see Satoransky square him up a little bit more and kind of don't give him that range to get to the basket. But the problem with that is Wade is so good at drawing fouls. So even if Sato were to jump in front and kind of cut him off or square him off or whatever, they're probably going to give him a foul call. So then you're at the situation there where I don't remember if they were in the bonus or not or whatever, but Wade could have pump faked and gotten to the line and shot free throws. So you're kind of looking at the same thing. And obviously you never want to jump on pump fakes. You never want to jump on any shot unless you're for sure that it's going up for sure. That's something that my coach always told me, and that's something that I like to use when teaching or when watching basketball in general, and it frustrates me so much because Kelly Oubre is the guy that jumps at shots all the time, and it bothers the living crap out of me. But this was just a situation where Satoransky should have known better. He's a smart player, and I thought that that shot was as good as going in, so the Wiz definitely dodged a bullet there.
Right, and, you know, another good point you raise is not only is Dwayne Wade a Hall of Famer, but the way he draws contact and kind of sells the contact proved to be a big difference, too. He was able to tie the score really late in the fourth quarter when it looked like he didn't get touched whatsoever, when Beal kind of might have slightly breathed the same breath as him in the corner, but Wade got to a free throw line for three shots, which were clutch, and he converted. So, of course, it's frustrating. Yeah, that was Oubre. I must have misspoke. My bad. So, yeah, Wade was the shooter in the corner. It looked like it wasn't a foul, but, yeah, Oubre must have gone in there for a little bit. So, yeah, it's something to be aware of, like, even if there are, whatever, 3 seconds left on that final shot. Like, you don't want to put him on the line, put him in position for an and one. That's a good point. We're going to take a real quick break, and then we'll be back to talk about Otto Porter and another hip injury he sustained and what kind of options the Wizards have moving forward to get creative with their lineup and possibly even, you know, maybe add another player since Ramon Sessions is only here for 10 days, presumably, unless he signs for the rest of the year. So Locked On Wizards podcast is coming right back. I'm your host, Noah Getzel, and Brendan Smith will be right back with you. Hey guys, welcome back to the Locked On Wizards podcast. The Wizards got a big overtime win over another playoff opponent, Miami Heat, tonight. So the Wizards advanced to 37-28, and the Heat are 3 games behind them. One thing that kind of stuck out in the final end of the fourth quarter and then overtime was the lack of Otto Porter, who was jumping for a long outlet pass and got a little bit undercut and came down really hard on his hip, which has had issues throughout his career. What did you see on that play, Brendan? And do you think it seems like something that's going to linger? He did stay in the game a little bit longer, hit a three, but then he was done for the night.
Well, I thought first originally when it happened, then I saw where he was grabbing. It looked like he was holding his thigh. So I thought, oh, okay, he just got a Charlie horse. Maybe he got kneed on the way up or whatever. But then you're like, oh, it's the hip. And you hear fucking Chris Miller talking about, oh, he's getting his hip looked at. And you're like, oh, well, that's not good. But it was just two guys going up for a ball. It definitely shouldn't have been a foul call or anything like that. But, I mean, the Wizards seriously have to be one of the worst outlet teams in the league. Like, seriously. Every time we throw an outlet pass, we fumble it or we don't get it. It goes out of bounds or something. It is crazy. But
the real frustrating part is it seems like they're always off of steals or blocks or, like, some way the Wizards force a turnover. And then they're like, all right, let's go in transition. And then all of a sudden they give it right back.
I think they just get too excited is what it is.
Yeah, but this play, by the way, came with 8:29 to go. So the Wizards, let's see, when did he sub out? So Porter hit that three, like, with 8:30, and then the very next play, I think the Wizards called, the Heat called timeout after that because the Wizards went up by 4, and then Markieff Morris replaced Porter, and his night was done. So he missed, 8.5 plus 5 minutes of overtime. Those were crucial minutes. Do you think it'll be something that, like, the Wizards should be incredibly cautious about in terms of resting Porter the rest of the way, even though they, or not the rest of the way, but, like, trying to figure out some way to give him perhaps a couple games off just because he's such a crucial part to what the Wizards will bring in the playoffs? Would you be willing to sacrifice a couple of seeding spots in order to make sure that Otto's healthy?
Well, first off, let me say that I don't like when any player on our team gets injured, but I am happy that this happened. And the reason I'm happy that this happened is because now Otto Porter's now missed a game. Kelly Oubre's missed a game. What have we noticed in both games when just one of those guys is not playing? There is no depth, there is no length, and there is no one else that you can put in there. And most Wizards fans now have been wanting a wing, not a point guard, which we decided to go with Ramon Sessions. And there's been plenty of guys now, and the Wizards have had an opportunity to get, and either their sales pitch wasn't good enough, or they simply just haven't looked. And these are guys like Marco Bellinelli, Shabazz Muhammad, and then there's plenty of other free agents that can still be signed. And I know, like, the EuroLeague and the Chinese Basketball Association, whatever, they're probably getting towards the end of their seasons or whatever, but the wing position still needs to be addressed. And I'm hoping that these Oubre and Otto injuries ring some sort of bell in Ernie's head that something needs to be done because this can't happen anymore. But going back to should the Wizards consider resting him, I think it depends on what their aspirations are. Are they okay with being, you know, the 4, 5, 6 seed? I personally wouldn't want to play Cleveland in the first round. So I would continue to try and maybe possibly even try to get the 3rd seed. And if that's the case, then you can't rest out of order. But I think that if you can get a decent enough wing, then maybe you can start thinking about that down the line. But again, if you don't make the move, then you can't give guys like Beal an auto rest. And that's going to be certainly frustrating, and especially for Beal if he keeps racking up these minutes. But obviously, you know, Otto Porter, his hip is not great. So you're going to need him preserved for the playoffs. So I think that they do need to make a move and get a wing. And sad to say that there has been no interest in a wing so far up to this point. So it's hard to say where they're going to go moving forward, but it needs to happen.
Mm-hmm. And And then one of the guys you mentioned, Shabazz Muhammad, he was released by the Timberwolves, and now he's on the Milwaukee Bucks, so a Wizards rival in the playoff picture. I don't know how many prospects are left, but you mentioned one guy, who was it, Hollis Thompson, is that right, who might be a potential option for that you like? He's high on your radar for the Wizards, right?
He is. I have always been a big Hollis Thompson advocate. He was with the Sixers for a while, is an excellent shooter, is a good team player. He's big, so he can play both wing positions. He's 6'8", around 205, 206 pounds, so maybe not the most big guy. He's kind of got like an Oubre frame a little bit. Mm-hmm. Definitely doesn't have the wingspan of Oubre, but you got what I'm saying. He's tall, and he's lanky, and he's definitely a guy that I could see fitting in and getting some minutes. He's definitely a productive player.
And do you think Mike Scott could potentially be able to slide into the small forward position? He is 6'8". 237 pounds, so that's a little bit heftier than you might want, you know, chasing guys off the three-point line. But do you foresee him more being the four-man or perhaps like a stretch five in a small ball lineup and not really able to be versatile enough to shift into the small forward spot?
No, I wouldn't put Mike Scott in the small forward position at all, mm-hmm. and I don't understand why so many people think that they could put him there. His defense would not be that great. His offense obviously would limit him. It just wouldn't be a good idea. Maybe if this was like the 2000, whatever it was, Detroit Pistons, when they rolled out the lineup of, what was it, Greg Monroe, Andre Drummond, and Josh Smith, like all in the front court at the same time. Like, that's essentially what you'd be doing, and we saw how well that worked out. So, no, I wouldn't play Mike Scott at the three at all.
Okay, so essentially your only solution if injuries continue to be an issue, and even if they don't, like either, you know, get Devin Robinson some reps, bring him off the G League, or actually sign someone who can contribute, because you don't want to take any chances on, you know, a lack of depth once you're coming into the playoffs, especially like Porter has had these issues on and off all season, and it definitely affected him earlier in the season. He missed some games. A lot of people were complaining that he wasn't really as fast in terms of his defensive recoveries and running out on the break, which is where he earns all of his bread, just like being that high energy hustle guy who can, you know, do all the things that Kelly Oubre has done this year, maybe with a bit higher basketball IQ.
Right, exactly. And my thing is, like, we wouldn't necessarily need to sign a wing. Like, if John Wall were healthy, you could slide Saddle right into that position and he'd be true. Okay. But we don't have the luxury of doing that. So I think, and especially even if Wall comes back, you know, he's probably going to be starting out getting what, like 20 minutes. His minutes are going to have to increase pretty rapidly. So you don't want to put too much pressure on a guy like that. So I think that if these injuries keep happening, especially with the wing players, there needs to be a signing. I mean, I think there needs to be a signing right now, regardless. Mm-hmm. I mean, even if Otto and Oubre are healthy, there still needs to be at wing depth, because Jody Meeks particularly is not the best player, and he's been actually, I think, pretty decent since the All-Star break. He hasn't still hit some of the shots that you would like to see him make, but he's been more engaged, he's been better, and I think that if Scott Brooks keeps running the offense around him in the second unit, that you'll see more results. But again, when you kind of exile him and you kind of tell him to sit in the corner and then make a play out of nowhere at times, he's going to look bad. Absolutely. But he definitely also, like I said, he hasn't hit those shots that we've needed him to make, but he does look more engaged, so that's a positive sign.
And you mentioned the point guard play, so like if Wall was healthy, could possibly be flexible with Satoransky's positioning. What did you think of the first showing this season of Ramon Sessions, who played a little bit in the 2014-15 year, and then he was like the full-time backup 2015 and 16 for the Wizards? He had 6 points, but only went 1 of 5 tonight. This is his second 10-day contract. He just signed it on Monday. After the first stint, he played 5 games, but didn't actually log any minutes in any of those games. So was it surprising at all to see him come in as the first point guard off the bench instead of Tim Frazier? And did you like Sessions production in 13 minutes? 6 points, 1 assist, 4 free throws.
I actually thought that he was going to be the backup point guard going forward until either they decide to release him or sign him for the rest of the season. I mean, I knew, especially when you bring a guy like that back for a second 10-day who didn't play at all, you're obviously going to play him the second time around. So I didn't think it was a case like some people thought, that they were just trying to fill a roster spot so they don't get penalized or whatever the hell it is. But I thought he played okay. He's still hesitant, like most players are when they first get signed to a team. He shied away from some shots. Like, for example, he had a couple wide open wing threes that he could have taken, and then like he took a contested one in the corner that skated off the front of the rim. So he didn't like to see that, but he was aggressive. He attacked the basket. He had some, you know, a couple of questionable shots that he threw up there and probably weren't the best of things. But, I mean, we knew what Ramon Sessions was. If we were expecting, like, a very efficient Ramon Sessions, is that we were going to get. We were getting a guy that's going to be chaotic and try to get to the rim. His playmaking was a little less than to be desired. He had Mike Scott, I think, on one play, and I was like, oh, Ramon, just dish the ball, and he didn't do it, but he was wide open. So, and, I mean, he obviously isn't the best of playmakers either, but we knew that. But he had some big moments for the Wizards in the playoffs, and he's a guy that's not scared of the moment, and I think that he's going to fit in nicely as the backup point guard until John Wall comes back.
So you like him backing up Zadorinsky better than Frazier at this point?
Absolutely.
And what do you think Frazier's weaknesses are? Just inability to shoot and defend bigger point guards?
I mean, yeah. I mean, it's pretty much just about a size thing at this point. I was watching closely today at how Sessions was just his height was doing something like making those guards shy away from shots. Like, he would be maybe a couple feet away from guys or whatever, but just his height and having a hand up just kind of make guys like Dragic shy away from shots. And that's something that, you know, in those situations, if Frazier were in there, they probably shoot those shots. So, I mean, if Frazier were 6'3 and 190 pounds, whatever Ramon Sessions is, I mean, I would definitely take Frazier over to Ramon Sessions. I think that he is a more skilled player than Ramon Sessions, but Ramon is more aggressive. He gets to the line like we saw. I think that one thing that I noticed tonight too is his foul drawing skill, or whatever, if you want to call it a skill, is still there. And so when you have a guy like that and then Meeks in there, both are good at drawing fouls, I think that will be good for the second unit.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's not too big of a difference, but like when you think about point guards, like you want to be at least 6'3", and then when you look at Frazier, he's 6'1", maybe if you're generous, and he only weighs 170 pounds. So we're going to take one more quick break from Locked On Wizards podcast. We'll be back to talk about the relationship between players and officials, because the Wizards had a meeting with Monty McCutcheon, who has a new role in the league, who's kind of mentoring. He's overseeing all the officiating in terms of training and development. So we'll talk about some player quotes on that matter right after the break. So stay tuned. What's going on, everyone? Locked On Wizards podcast is back. I'm your host, Noah Getzel, and Brendan Smith is our guest joining us tonight. The last section of this podcast I want to talk about is kind of like the relationship between players and referees. That's been an ongoing issue, not just this year, but in past years. So Markieff Morris had some interesting comments that I'm going to play for you right after this. And so basically he said that everything that that players are saying to the refs basically just goes in one ear and out the other. Like, Morris still got a technical foul tonight for arguing with a call that he thought was, I believe he thought it was a charge, but he was called for a block, if that's right. And he basically, yeah, he said, you know, nothing's changed. These discussions won't really do anything this year, but he's optimistic about what might change next season. And he said the game isn't about the players and the refs. It's like the players are just playing for the fans. So they're trying to clean up the different tensions between officials and players, because it's kind of at like an all-time high right now. What do you think? And then Beal, of course, was more, his analysis of the discussion was that he's happy that there's a dialogue, and he was a little bit more diplomatic, but that's the way he, you know, responds in interviews versus Markieff Morris. So do you foresee any changes in the playoffs? Do you think, What do you think is going on with the situation, and do you think anything's going to change, Brendan?
No, I don't think that anything is going to change, and I'm glad that there's, like you said, there's starting to be dialogue, and I'm sure the players appreciate that, and I'm sure the referees are happy that they get to voice their concerns to the players as well, and but I just don't think that that's going to change a whole lot of stuff. And I mean, if you have players that are going to keep, you know, talking and saying whatever they're going to say and keep getting technical fouls, I mean, that is on them. That is their fault. Now, I do agree with the foul calling in general, that it does need to be more balanced, because obviously, you know, there are superstar calls, you know, quote unquote, and whatever you want to call them. And especially with guys like James Harden and Isaiah Thomas, who just kind of flop and get calls. And I hate them both so much for it, but they're obviously good at acting, and that's fine. But it needs to be more balanced. There shouldn't have to be a term called superstar calls. It should just be balanced. If it's a foul, call it. If it's not, then don't call it. But all in all, I don't think that that's going to nothing is going to change from doing this. And again, the dialogue is good. It's positive. And maybe you start inching more and more towards making it even as the years come. But I mean, especially this year and going into the playoffs, there's a lot of top heavy talent with some of these teams. I mean, it's not going to be even. Let's be real.
Why do you think that flopping has picked up so much in, I don't know, the past 5 years, let's say? Like, it just seems that it's so much more common than it used to be, ever since, like, they changed the hand check rule, or I'm not quite sure what it is, but players are just, you know, pleading to officials instead of playing the game.
It's just because, I think it's because the players are whining too much, and the refs are just kind of caving and saying, oh, okay, then that's where the other players get mad, because then they say, well, you give this guy this call because he complains, and now I'm going to complain until I get the call. And I think that was a situation that John Wall was in for a little while. A lot of guys would get calls, and then you know, he wouldn't. And then now it's like, even when Wall doesn't, he clearly doesn't get fouled and he still wants to call, and then he gets mad. And me personally, I'm looking at John Wall like, well, you got to do a better job of drawing contact because you're not drawing fouls. You're not. But you understand his frustration. You relate with that because, like I said, there are guys out there that get those calls and he doesn't. Mm-hmm. So there needs to be a balance.
Yeah, I think this arguing with the officials spills over way too much in terms of, like, the Wizards are a team that really struggle when maybe, like, they miss a shot or they just think they get a foul call but no whistle is blown, and then they're often, like, their transition defense is just terrible. And, like, you can tell it a lot when John Wall, you know, drives in and he goes into the teeth of defense, draws a lot of contact, they call nothing, it's a turnover, he stays, he doesn't hustle back, and then everyone's energy is just low when they see him not even going back on defense. So it's definitely an issue to be addressed, and I think you're right. Like, the biggest thing is that players just can't be babies. And even if they seem like they're getting fouls, just kind of trust the refs, know that it's going to even out, and, like, keep playing. You got to hustle back, because ultimately you're not just costing your team 2 points if you miss a layup when you think you get fouled. You might be costing your team 4 or 5 because you don't play defense the next play.
Yeah, that's definitely one of the things that I've been harping on Wall with, too, is just his effort after he doesn't get a call. And, I mean, that's all around the league, too. And if guys don't get a call, then they want to pout. And it's not the same hard-nosed type rough style. You know, you just got to kind of just fight through it and just keep playing basketball. And I hope that that's something that he's going to do when he comes back, because they're going to need that.
Mm-hmm. All right, Brennan, well, the Wizards get one day off, and then it's back. Let's see, are the Wizards playing Friday or Saturday? It's Friday night in New Orleans, then Saturday
I think it's Friday, and then Friday,
so
and Saturday.
2 day rest, which is well-deserved. Markieff Morris played 41 minutes. Beal played back-to-back nights of 43. Tomas Satoransky had 39 tonight against the Heat. So, you know, heavy minute load. It's not going to get any easier from here. They'll have to embrace these days off and hopefully get a couple of road victories before they're back home Tuesday. So thanks so much for joining and listening in on the Locked On Wizards podcast. I should have said this a half hour ago, but you can subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher or Spotify. You can listen on Google Home. You can visit us on the web, lockedonwizards.com. Listen on SoundCloud. Follow us on Twitter. And that's all we got. So thank you, Brendan. And I hope to see you back on the podcast soon.
All right. Thanks for having me, as always.
Absolutely, man. Here's Markieff Morris on player-referee relations. He says it's at an all-time worst right now, so listen in. Take care.
Take care.
This morning you guys met with Monty McCutchen for this respect of the rules, respect of the game, stuff. What was your takeaway?
Nothing. I still got to check tonight, so honestly, it really doesn't. None of that, you know, just went in, like, all of it just went in one ear out the other, you know, because sometimes, you know, emotions get involved and, you know, guys just jumping the gun, but, you know, hopefully next year it'll change, though.
Morris was then asked if it seemed like a dialogue where the players and were actually trying to talk with the officials, or if it was more so one-sided, and he said it seemed like an open dialogue.
But it was more so them talking and trying to clean up at the bunch of different stuff. You know, there's just a lot going on between the players and the refs right now, and we just trying to, you know, honestly, the game is not about the players and the refs. We playing for the fans, so we trying to clean it up a whole lot. You know, it's had an all-time high right now.